I'm Kirk Harnack. On This Week in Radio Tech, we're live from WHBC in Canton, Ohio. We're going to check out the retro radio equipment closet. Hey, Chris Tarr, Chris Tobin, and Tom Ray join me on This Week in Radio Tech, coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is This Week in Radio Tech, episode 114, recorded February 1st, 2012. This Old Birdhouse. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Axia Audio and the new IQ Audio Console. Feature-rich, affordable IP audio consoles on the web at axiaaudio.com. It's time for This Week in Radio Tech. Hi there, I'm Kirk Harnack. I'm glad you could join us. This is the show where we talk about radio technology, and that nowadays that includes so much. In fact, I've been working today almost all day with an IT engineer here at a broadcast facility. So radio tech is really evolving to include a lot of things. It still includes antennas and towers and coax and connectors and phone systems, even POTS lines, but it also includes lots of new technology. So here to talk about old technology and new technology are my partners in crime on the show. Let's welcome in first from the Hudson Valley of New York. It's Tom Ray from WOR and Buckley Broadcasting. Hey, Tom, how are you?
Greetings, Kirk. Doing just fine. Just wearing the team colors.
Okay.
And I'm VP, Corporate Director of Engineering of Buckley Broadcasting and WOR in New York City. And like I said, go Giants. We're going to beat the Patriots.
All right. Thanks for being with us, and we're going to have some things that are right up your alley, Tom. You weren't here for the pre-show meeting, but that's okay. You fall right in. Also with us from New York, from Manhattan, the best-dressed engineer in radio, it's Chris Tobin. Hey, Chris.
Hello, Kirk. Hello, Tom. I tell you, today has been a great day in the city. It's 62 degrees, nice and warm and comfortable. Yes, it is February 1st, though. Who knew? Having a good time. I'm a president of CCS Music Am, for disclosure purposes. And we're going to have a good time with those artifacts that you've dug up, Kirk.
So 62 in New York today on February 1st. When's Groundhog Day? Is that tomorrow?
That's tomorrow. So make sure you go out and buy your ground pork tonight for Groundhog Day.
Okay.
Think about it for a
minute. Sure not to see your shadow. Yeah.
Okay. I think I got that. I'd rather go back to the time when I didn't get the joke. I could just look confused. So I can look confused instead of bewildered. All right. Also with us from Muckwanago, Wisconsin, the engineering geek Jedi, it's Chris Tarr. Hey, Chris.
Hello there. How are you?
Fantastic. What's up in your world?
Well, just flinging RF into the ether. That's what I do.
It is what we do, isn't it? Oh, we fling something. What's going on in your world besides flinging RF?
Well, let's see. I'm Director of Engineering for Intercom's radio stations in Madison, Milwaukee, contributing writer for Radio Guide, and all-around good guy. So I've been do a little bit of IT. I do a little bit of engineering. I do some contract work. I'm all over the place.
Well, we're going to be all over the place in terms of timelines on this show. Last week, our subject matter was all over the place. This week, it's the timeline that's all over the place. Oh, I'm giving away some of the clue here. Know what that is? I'll show you in a second. Our show is brought to you by Axia Audio, definitely in the here and now. Axia Audio on the web at axiaaudio.com. We'll be telling you about IQ consoles here in just a little while. Let's jump right into it. We're going to talk about some of the... Here, I'll set it up. Today, I made a little trip over to Canton, Ohio. And I'm being hosted by the folks here at WHBC. They have an AM and an FM here, 1480 AM and 94.1 FM. The AM is News Talk, and the FM is an AC format. And the building here in Canton is just absolutely gorgeous. It's an Art Deco building built in 1939, and they're still in the same building. This is the same lobby that they had in 1939. I wish I could pan the camera around. It is absolutely gorgeous. The entrance to the restroom is over here, and it's got beautiful mirrors and a round window that you can't see through, of course, on the men's room. Ladies' room, the powder room is the same over here. There's gorgeous leather furniture with beautiful wood piping around it. It is absolutely... Oh, hey, here's a picture of the building. Let's see if we can bring this right in here. Can we see that? There you go. There's WHBC, the outside, and just a gorgeous Art Deco building. Man, I'd like to work at a place like this. It's absolutely beautiful.
We can see the studio doors behind you, Kirk, and they're unbelievable. They really are. You know, the big window on it.
Oh, yeah, over there is let's see. I can't control the camera right now, but, yeah, there are some studio doors, and it's an amazing place, just gorgeous. And they've kept it. They not only kept it in great shape, but, of course, the things that needed updating, they've updated. So they've got a lot of new infrastructure here, a newer infrastructure. They're about to go to a new SIP phone system here in the next year or so. They're going to get rid of the POTS lines, and they'll have all the lines coming in on as Ethernet, as SIP trunks. And so, and of course, audio processing is thoroughly modern. Transmitters are thoroughly modern. And some of the studio gear is 10, 12 years old, and some of it's up to date. So really, quite a variety, but it's just great to be in this good-looking building. Well, about 20 minutes before we were going to start the show here, I came down here to do some consulting with the engineers. We're looking at some Telos gear and helping them get that connected and fixing a couple of software issues. And I thought, guys, you know what? How about if I just have dinner here in Canton and we'll do the show from here? And they said, absolutely, let's do it. So here we are. I'm just delighted to be hosted here at the gorgeous WHBC studios. Well, before the show started, Dale Lamb, the engineer here, said, "Hey, I got some cool old stuff you might want to show on your show tonight." Well, let's see it. So we walked down to the storage room downstairs, and it's a treasure trove of interesting things. Some of them old, some of them not so old. So I thought we'd run through a few of these, take a walk down memory lane, and actually talk about some of the technology involved in some of these items. Sound good? Is it a plan? Say sure. Yes.
Sounds like a plan.
Good
to
idea,
me.
Kirk.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Let's begin with something here. Let's begin with something really old. Really old. I have never actually held one of these in my hand before. And
how heavy
how
is
well
that?
This one's not too bad at all. It's let's see, compared to the Heil mic, it's a little heavier than the Heil mic. This is a carbon microphone? Yeah?
Yep.
I think.
Yep. That's what it is.
A carbon mic. How did these things, what kind of connectors on the end? Oh, there's a bare wire. Okay. Did these require some voltage, some battery voltage across them? I guess so. It doesn't make its own power.
I would think. So, it's kind of like a telephone. You have to put a little bit of voltage across there to get a voltage difference to make it work.
Right. So it's the element, I guess, is just not too much different than a carbon button microphone on a phone. It's held in place with springs, so it you can bump it a little bit and won't carry over too much to the mic. I would imagine you had to talk pretty loud into it, and there'd be a little area in there with some carbon granules, and your voice pressure would push the diaphragm and change the how hard packed the carbon granules are, and thereby change the resistance, the instantaneous resistance of electricity going through it. So you put a little electricity going through it. And you get changes in resistance, and then at the other end where the amplifier is, let me guess, you'd probably put a capacitor in series with a leg of that, and that would get you the AC voltage, what was coming off of this thing, and then you run that into a preamplifier, and you amplify the heck out of it, and you get voice or music or whatever's coming into it.
That's cool.
You guys have any experience with mics like this? None of us are that old, are we?
I haven't seen one like that, Kirk, but I've seen a carbon mic that it was a Western Electric, which was all fully enclosed. It wasn't set up like that. That weighed a ton, but it was gorgeous. I mean, it's unbelievable. That's a very cool mic. That really is.
I'm looking for a brand on this guy, and so far I'm not seeing one. You guys know a brand on this thing, Dale? Any idea?
Not a Western Electric.
Maybe it's made by... Maybe it's made by the Canton Microphone Company. Who knows?
An RCA build.
Oh, that's right. This whole place was an RCA build. You open up the RCA catalog, say, yes, I want that radio station. And they'd come in and build the whole thing for you. So, All right. Let's move to a different microphone. Ugh, this one is heavy. Now, this looks also looks like a carbon microphone with a carbon capsule in it. Let's see. Is there any? I feel just so dumb not knowing about this old stuff. Sure has a lot of screws in it. Look at all these.
Yeah, those look like a telephone microphone setup.
Well, it's got a lot of screws around here. Must be holding the diaphragm really securely. Otherwise, why would you need so many of these? So there's a diaphragm probably stretched between these plates right here. Boing, sorry. And then there's this assembly here, which must hold the carbon module firmly in place. And then the diaphragm moves against that. But it's also very spring loaded, and it's a modern or somewhat modern stand that it's on. This one doesn't have any wires on it, so we'll set that one aside. Those are really pretty old. Now, none of us as engineers have ever dealt with any of those microphones. Let's see. We have now here's one that's a bit more modern. In fact, it even has an XLR connector on the end of it. This one does say RCA on it. Let's hold it up. Let me hold.
Oh, I have RCA. Seen those before.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen those. I don't know, but I've seen it.
Now, is this or is this not what they call a shower microphone? Because it kind of looked like a shower head. No?
I don't think I've heard that phrase, but see what you're saying.
This would be a dynamic mic. In other words, it's not powered. It's got a coil that moves. A diaphragm moves a coil. There's a permanent magnet in there, and the coil moves past the permanent magnet, thereby making minute amounts of electricity that come out here on the XLR connector. This does look like a standard size mic mic stand holder. I'll bet I could replace this Heil mic with this guy, and it would work. You want to give it a try?
Yeah, let's give it a try.
See if it works. Yeah. All right. Hang on.
Let me find why not?
All right. Now my audio is going to go away for a second.
RCA microphone.
You guys run the show for a second.
In keeping with the theme, I'm using a RCA microphone ribbon mic here in the video for those that can see it. The baby was a 44, I think.
Hey, check this out.
Yeah, it's a classic.
Check this out. What do you think?
Oh, it does work.
Yeah, it does work. It even sounds, it's got a warmth to it. It's kind of cool. Hello.
You sound like it would.
Hello. Yeah, I kind of like that. How about that? All right, let's put the Heil back in here.
This is London.
London calling.
Chris, to tell us about that mic you're using while I'm changing this.
This is one of the classic shapes that you'll see from time to time. I think these used to be called the Baby 44s. RCA 44 microphone. It's a ribbon mic. Inside the ribbon, it's aluminum. If you can picture an accordion-type piece of aluminum, maybe about a quarter inch wide, and suspended between two magnets. And as the air from your voice hits the sound from your voice hits the aluminum foil, it vibrates, creates a current, passes it through the wire into the XLR connector. If you're speaking of warmth and very wide dynamic range, these microphones tend to have that sound. They are unique in their sound. They don't require close miking, so traditionally talking up real close like this isn't necessary. Actually will damage it. It's a really cool mic. Actually, this microphone still works, and I've used it on a couple of remote broadcasts over the years. A couple of program directors wanted some retro-looking things during the holidays at the outside broadcast, so we used it. It was pretty cool. And I have to say, ribbon mics definitely have a unique sound that unfortunately I think has been lost in some of the newer styles of audio recordings and audio reproductions.
Oh. Well, didn't those mics make Frank Sinatra sound pretty good? Or did he just sound
good
anyway?
They made a lot of people sound good, better than they were, or just enhanced. I always like to say that a good microphone just brings the true tone of your voice to the audience. You already have the talent. It just helps bring it out, extend it further, that's all. So for Frank Sinatra and others, yes, this is a very nice vocal microphone.
All right, I'm going to pick on the young whippersnapper in the crowd here, and that would be Chris Tarr. Chris, can you see this connector very well? Let me hold it up a little closer to the camera. There we go. That's a mic connector. What kind of mic is on the other end of this cable?
An old one.
You are right. Awesome.
Yeah. You are correct, sir.
Chris, That's why they call you the Geek Jedi.
That's right. I'm smart like that.
Well, this is going to be great. I can't wait to show you this. This is the mic on the other end of, remember now, it's this cable. See that? See that? Look at what's on the, okay, the cable is this cotton cable. It's very, it's frayed in some places. I'll show you what it's frayed of in just a second. Here we go. Are you ready?
Oh, my Lord.
It's a mailbox. It's
a mail. It's a,
it is
what they call it, a birdhouse or a mailbox microphone. Look at that. Look at that. WHBC. Oh, my goodness.
That's cool.
I don't know how you, I, yeah, you just, you talk in this end of the thing. What's all this for? What's in here?
There's somebody hold it for you while you're doing it.
Go ahead.
There's probably stuff inside, but my guess is that it's to protect the microphone. Yeah, maybe you take it either to a noisy location or to a something, you know, maybe someplace that might have wind or something. I don't know, but it's very cool.
Well, it is worth noting that this is a microphone number one. If you can see on the back there, you see this is mic number one from WHBC. that's just absolutely amazing. Dale's nearby. Dale's the chief here. Would you have any interest in popping the screws off this thing and having a look inside, or do you feel too nervous about that?
I'll take that offline and do that.
It looks like it's got two here, and one's missing, so it's got a total of five standard screws on it, and it looks like the top will. I'll bet you there's a tube or two in there. I bet the preamp is in there. So, okay. All right, Dale.
Give me 5, 10 minutes.
Sure, take your time. We got 45 more minutes. So, all right. So that was pretty cool. What? How can we top that? I don't know that we can. You know, have any of you ever? Surely you've gone into stations where they had an old mic, either on air or on a shelf somewhere.
Oh, sure.
Have they looked like any of these we've pulled out so far?
Yeah, well, the one small, like you called it, the shower mic, I actually have one of those in the shop.
Oh, okay. All right. Do you use it for anything?
A shower mic, and we've had a 44DX, which is similar to, well, not similar, but it's the one Johnny Carson had on his desk. I've seen some of those, and the Western Electric, that was kind of like those RCA carbon mics, except they were fully enclosed.
Ah, okay. Sure, since they had something around them. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I have another mic. I guess we'll go ahead and get all the mics out of the way here. Here's another one. This dog is heavy. And there's what it looks like from the side. See? And
yeah, I've seen those.
I'll show you the connector in just a moment. But it must have a big diaphragm in there. And of course, gorgeous mic flag on it. Let's see. There is a plaque here. Can I read it or not? Oh, it's RCA. It does say RCA on it. And my tired old eyes can't quite read all the stuff on it. Looks like it's got a serial number of 4050E, or maybe that's the model number. Yeah, that's the model number, 4050E, and serial number 4067. Maybe they started at 4000. Maybe they didn't. I don't know. But what's interesting about this mic is the audio connector that's on it. I'll hold this up, and I don't know if you can see inside there or not. There are AC cords that would fit that.
Yeah, that looks like an IEC connector.
It doesn't have. They're round. They're, you know, they're pegs, not blades. But you could get in a great deal of trouble, I think, with this if you tried to plug it in like that. Man, this thing weighs. Seriously, this must be 8 pounds. That is just amazing. Let's see what it says on the back here. Oh, well, the connector on the back was made by Canon. We've all used the word, oh, that's got a Canon connector. But, you know, Canon made a lot of different connectors, I suppose. Canon Los Angeles. Oh, so there you go. All right. Dale's back with the birdhouse microphone. And what's it got, Dale?
I am surprised.
Oh, look at that.
Very
look
cool.
At that. It's got, so it has a tube missing, it looks like. There's a socket there with nothing in it.
It's like a pad or
a maybe a pad or a filter goes there. It's got a battery. Oh, I want to hold. Yeah. I want to hold this up to the camera.
A portable mic.
There's a battery in there.
Wow!
Look at that.
Check that out.
And the two tubes. Holy moly! Wow. That's just amazing. So what are these tubes? I wonder. They're socketed. I don't know. They feel. I don't want to break anything. Is it wiggling? Is it coming? Yeah, it's coming out. Okay, a little slowly but surely. Okay. What is that? I'm not seeing I'm seeing what used to be a little logo on the top of it. And I'm not seeing any mark. Okay, well, let's look on the base. The tube brand is Cunningham.
Cunningham?
I was not expecting that. I was expecting to see RCA or Western Electric or something on
GE
there.
GE or, but, yeah.
Yeah, Cunningham. And let's see. It is a CX340. A Cunningham CX340.
Watch Kirk Hardack as he goes through the wild looking for strange microphones. Crikey!
And what is this one? Oh, interesting. Now, why would they have a tube in there labeled that? Unsatisfactory. When you buy a birdhouse microphone, be sure you check the tubes inside, because they may be, like this one, unsatisfactory.
That tube is a Kirk is a triode.
The CX340.
Yep, it's the CX340 is a triode, and what I found so far, it doesn't tell us like things like what the filament voltage is. But let's see what this one says.
It's got four connectors.
Filaments 5 volts. 5 volts at a quarter amp.
Quarter amp.
Yep.
It's okay. So here's the base. It's four connectors. So that means it's got to be a triode tube. It's got two for the filament, one for the grid, and one for the plate. Right. So it's just a simple triode.
It's made by Cunningham ET in Harrison, New Jersey.
Yep. Harrison, New Jersey.
Radio production between 1915 and 1920.
What? Just 5 years worth?
That's what I'm finding. I'm trying to.
That would mean that this thing was 19 years old at the earliest when they bought it. I don't. Seems like they'd produce them longer than that. Anyway, hey, check this one more thing out. I don't know if this sticker was applied to this tube later on or whatever, but if I know the economics of radio stations, this is probably true. Let's get a close up on the sticker right there. They bought this thing at. Oh, let me turn it right way. At look at this Western Auto Supply Company, and it's checked unsatisfactory. And they bought it at the tire store in town.
That's great.
Western Auto.
Looking at some history of radio manufacturing, it seems that on June 15th, 1920, Cunningham gets two agreements with the new RCA, where he has to drop his production and gets deliveries granted by RCA for his trade name in 1920. So that's when it stopped with the name Cunningham and it went to RCA.
There's a date on the battery we talked about earlier. Oh my goodness. Let's see.
What's the born-on date?
September 1931.
Does that list the voltage, Kirk?
On the battery? I haven't seen that just yet. It's soldered in place, so I can't turn it around too much.
I'm wondering what the heck a battery is doing in that, because it looks like it's something that would be powered by that cord.
It does.
It's the 5-volt battery.
It's a 5-volt battery. Did that supply the filament voltage?
Can't imagine. No. Maybe that was a bias voltage?
That's September 1931. That's the date they tell you to put it in service by. So that's the use-by date. So you know it was made well before that, or at least a bit before that.
Well, it doesn't have a copper top, so it's probably not any good anymore.
I'm guessing it doesn't. I'm guessing it's dead. Oh, my goodness. Wow, that's just amazing. Anything else to really check out there? Just
check the phone lining.
Tell him thanks for doing that, by the way, for taking that apart.
Thanks for popping that off. I appreciate you taking that risk there. So the inside of this has a foam lining. And by the way, the foam is still in good shape from how many years ago is this? What is it, from 31 to 2011? How many years is that? Is that 80 years?
Damn.
From 31 to 2011. And we know that, yeah. Well, we think the tubes only made were made well before that. Positively amazing. Okay. Thanks, Dale. Appreciate that. All these things are making a mess on the desk. Oh, it's technology. Where has it come to? I mean, now we have Bob Heil making these mics. And of course, there's lots of mic companies, and they're all, you know, they're all highly sophisticated, very very close tolerances and good design. I mean, a mic like this is so directional. I think Bob or Leo have demonstrated this on the network before, but I'm talking right into it, and you get off to the side, and the volume just goes way, 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 way down back here, and you can hardly hear me. Right? And here I am back. Wow. So let's take a minute and recall, you guys, surely you've had experiences coming across old radio gear. Have you found a piece of old radio gear that you were able to put to use? I mean, as something besides a paperweight or make it into a table lamp?
I've got an old radio that's upstairs in the living room that's put to good use. It still works. It's 1930 Philco Cathedral that works like a champ.
Now, is that a big piece of furniture or a tabletop radio?
It's a tabletop. I'm going to say, let's see. It's about that tall, maybe a little taller. It's got, I think, 7 tubes in it. Big speaker, and it looks like it gets the name because it looks like a cathedral window that you'd find on a church. And the interesting thing about radios from that era and before is if you take out the speaker, if you look at the speaker, if you unplug it, they actually plug in. The speaker has a little 4-prong plug on it, and you sit there and go, 4 prongs? It's a speaker. Well, what they do is 2 of those prongs are used for the audio for the voice coil. The other 2 are used for an electromagnet that's on there that works with the voice coil, but it doubles as a filter choke for the power supply.
Hmm. Oh, so did it not need a permanent magnet then in the speaker because they made their own magnet?
They made their own magnet, and like I said, it doubled as a filter choke for the power supply, so it didn't need a separate filter choke to make it even more heavier than it already is.
So why didn't the speaker hum if the coil's being used as a choke? You know, there's pulsating DC coming into it.
That's a good question. I have no clue, but they did work.
Wow. Let's... Chris Tarr, you work at a place there that's been around for a while there, and doesn't, you know, your transmitter building is pretty old, kind of an Art Deco style.
Yeah. There's not a lot equipment wise left. We have a couple of old microphones. Of course, our transmitter is our backup transmitter is a 1957 RCA, so that in itself is kind of ancient. Really all we have that's old is things like paperwork, pictures. That sort of thing, which I keep very well, take very good care of. You know, it seems like over time people, you know, they go in and they clean and they throw that stuff out and they don't care. You know, they don't appreciate it the way we do. So I've taken great care to kind of preserve a lot of those, you know, the old ledgers and pictures. And we even have old transmitter logs from, 30s, 40s, 50s, logging readings and things on some of the transmitters. But I really haven't run across a lot of what I would consider really old gear, you know, a lot of just kind of 60s, 70s vintage stuff.
Okay. Dale's bringing me some photographs here from the station from the days of yesteryear. This, hold this up as still as I can for you. We can do the little Zoom thing on Skype. You guys are masters at that. That's pretty good. This is the original transmitter at St. John's Church Rectory Boiler House. So the boiler house of the church rectory at 6th and McKinley back in the late 1920s.
Now, Kirk, when did WHBC sign on the air?
Well, I don't know because they told me this building was from 39. So obviously they were on the air before this 1925.
Hmm. I wonder if that transmitter was actually built maybe bought as a kit and built because they did that a lot in those days.
Dale, do you know if the transmitter was built and bought as a kit, built on site?
It was a 10-watt homebrew.
A 10-watt homebrew.
Oh, my God. It's as big as a 5-kilowatt today.
I know. Okay, check this out. That big cone thing on the wall there in the upper part of the picture, that's a speaker, isn't it? Yeah, that's a studio speaker. And the door there says this is the WHBC Blue Room Studio. And that's something. So this looks like a little ante room outside, like a like the green room or something. Oh, it's a different location. Yeah, okay. And so here's, look at this ornate and beautiful and comfortable music performance room with all the curtains going on there and the microphones, piano.
Kind of looks like Snooki's bedroom.
Snooki looks like Snooki's bedroom. Okay. Guys. Here is here's a control board, and it looks like a master control. And is that turntable? Is that a lathe, a cutting lathe on the turntable? Kind of looks like it.
Looks like it.
It actually cut a transcription there. Oh, my goodness. Good job, Burks, zooming around. It's awesome. It's amazing what a $30 camera and a $10,000 video console will do.
And you know what's amazing? That turntable there probably used a washing machine motor.
It probably did use a washing machine motor. Now this picture, somebody needs to Google this. What artist had an album called Wide World? Wide, Wide World. This is Studio C at WHBC. Anybody know what kind of console that is? Pretty amazing.
I can't tell.
Yeah, three turntables, I suppose, because they may have played commercials from transcription discs. So it took three turntables three at least. Oh, look what's next to the chair right here, right where my finger is. You know what that is? That is an ashtray. Always close at hand. And here's this album I was speaking of, Wide Wide World. I just wonder who the artist is on that album.
I'm looking it up.
I'm looking. I can't find it either.
Aaron O'Donnell Music. It says I've on Amazon, but that's no. She's too modern.
All right. Let's see. We already had that picture. Let's look at. Oh. So, Dale, this is like a transmitter room right here, doesn't it?
It's a second site.
A second site. Oh, now, in modern times now, WHBC has a daytime AM site and a nighttime AM site. So this was one of the two sites, huh? 1947 for this place. There we go.
Wow. They don't make iron like that anymore, that's for sure.
They don't make iron like that anymore, that's for sure. Oh, you got to see the floor here. You got to see this floor. Wow. Check this out.
Now, that's
what's
awesome
on the floor?
That is all kinds. I got to do that in the carpeting in my new building. That is all kinds of
that's
awesome.
That's very cool.
I love it. Isn't that gorgeous? Now, that's right here where we are now, isn't it, Dale? Yeah, that's the hallway that's literally starts 5 feet from where I'm sitting right now, 10 feet.
That's awesome.
Isn't that gorgeous? Oh man, this is one of the best shows we've done.
Wow.
Oh man, how come when I plan the show it sucks, and when somebody else is involved it just comes out great? Let's see. We have look at this. Look at what says on the bottom of this picture here. If we can zoom into the bottom of the picture, the words at the bottom. It says the new and modern WHBC. And now we take a look at these pictures. Isn't that great? Isn't that just awesome?
Wow.
Wow. What would it be like to work in this place at that time? There's the building, and that's the building I'm in right now. And it you know doesn't look too much different than that. The cars outside are you know a little more up to date. But all right, we're almost done with the show and tell portion. Well, this part we still have some more equipment to go. Okay. This is the room I'm in right now. And I don't know what the date on this is, but would you say it's from the mid 40s? Maybe
40s, maybe 50s, but no.
This is 39.
That.
This is when the building was opened. Okay, this is before the war.
Wow.
And the clock on the wall up here is there's still a clock behind me right now, but they changed the face of it, but they still have this sign right here that shows which studio is on the air. Behind the glass here, they can light up an A, a B, or a C. that tells you which studio is on air. And there's a reception desk in the middle of this room right now. It's right behind me. So, who's this? Okay. Gotcha. Remember a little while ago, we looked at this microphone, right? This thing that weighs a ton. You could hurt somebody with this. You could kill somebody with that microphone. Well, here we are. They're interviewing the pig right there with that very microphone. And then I wonder who's in this picture right here. I almost thought I recognized the guy, but it's not a famous actor, is it? Okay. This man on the street being interviewed with that very same microphone, the very one that I was holding. Ah, now check this out. Here's the remote truck right here.
A Woody.
Is that what that is? Is that what they call those?
And if I'm not mistaken, to get the signal back to the station in those days, if they did it, they did it on a shortwave frequency that was around 40 megahertz.
That's right.
You think? Really?
Oh, yeah.
Around 40 megahertz. Okay. Well, what about the RPUs that were just above the AM band, like around 1.6 megahertz?
They shared those with the
Remember
police.
Those? Yeah, that was police band, calls. Yeah.
I have one more picture. I'm not sure how this studio was used because the turntable looks very lonely. looks more like a room to audition records.
It's probably a transcription turntable.
Transcriptions, yeah. Not a cutting lathe.
Well, maybe.
Amazing. Well, I have a few more things to show. Some of them is old, some of them is not, but let's take a moment right now and take a break and listen and hear from our sponsor of This Week in Radio Tech. Happens to be the folks that I work for, and so I'm so blessed to, A, work for them, B, they pay for part of the show, and that's Axia Audio. Axia Audio is a place where you can the people who invented audio consoles that use audio over IP. Axia, we had to invent a standard to make this work. We call it LiveWire, because before that existed, before we did that, you put together the standard audio protocols that LiveWire uses. We put them together in such a way and developed a clocking system that allows very low latency over IP connections. And this had been a problem up to that point, up until 2004 or so. If you put audio over IP, you were going to have more latency than you could stand between your microphone and your headphones. And of course, that's critical for a disc jockey. So the development teams in the U.S. and in Latvia together collaborated and developed what is now called LiveWire. There's a whole book written about LiveWire by Steve Church and Skip Peasy. So you ought to check that out on Amazon sometime. This has developed to the point now where we have lots of consoles. There's over 2,500 Axia audio consoles in service today around the world. So does the tech work? Yeah. Plenty of partners partner with Axia. Lots of automation companies, hardware companies like 25/7, even other console companies like Radio Systems have partnered with Axia, putting LiveWire into their consoles. There's satellite receivers that contain LiveWire and let you connect with just one cable, plug it into your Ethernet switch, and route that audio all around the studio plant wherever you want it. So, and you may have heard some interesting news. The folks at Orban have now partnered with Axia for putting LiveWire technology into some Orban products. I don't know what they're going to be. I guess we'll find out when they come out. Well, a development that Axia has come up with in the last year or so has been the IQ console. And this is a very flexible audio console, the IQ. It begins life with 8 faders and a box that goes in your rack that has all the audio inputs and outputs, including microphone inputs. It also has a GPIO for contact closures to control equipment that's around the console. And it has a built-in Ethernet switch. So no longer do you have to buy a separate Ethernet switch to go in a studio like our co-host Tom Ray did. Tom bought an Ethernet switch for each of his studios at WOR. This new console has the switch built right in. So it's very easy to connect studios together and to connect them to a master control area where you then can put an Ethernet switch and connect all your items in the rack room or master control area. The IQ console can expand. 8 faders is what it starts at. You can expand it to 16 faders or even up to 24 faders. And even at 24 faders, the list price is around $12,000 US. So it's a heck of a deal. 24 faders for $12,000. It's all live wire, IP audio. It's really cool. So I encourage you to check it out. Go to the web and check out axiaaudio.com. Check out all the partners and see how easy it is. There's a couple of videos there on the homepage. I, along with Rachel Bernard, recorded a video on how to hook up an Axia system pretty quickly. Two videos there, 10 minutes long each. You're gonna enjoy watching that. We configure the console and everything. Check it out, axiaaudio.com. And thank you, Axia Audio, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. All right, on with the tour. What are we going to show you next? There's something a bit more modern that we don't use very much anymore. Who knows what this is?
Fidelity Pack cart.
Audio that, pack.
Yeah, that is it.
Audio pack.
Audio pack. Audio pack. So Fidelity Pack is another brand of these cards.
An A4. 70 seconds according to the bottom.
What? Yeah, you're right. It is 70. How did he know that? Oh, it says 70 right there on the bottom.
And that's got a bias of 250 nanowebers.
That would be the flux level. Chris Tarr, I haven't heard much from you. Tell the audience what this is.
Oh, my goodness.
The technology inside here.
The technology inside, it's a continuous loop cartridge. And essentially, the tape loops around in on itself. And the way that it works is it uses a tone to tell the machine when to stop playing it back. So essentially what happens is it self-cues. So you put the cartridge in. It should be, if the guy who was on the air before you let it cue back up, ready to play, you press the button, it starts playback, and then it continues to run until it comes back around again to where the audio started and then shuts off. And then the cartridge is ready to play again. And because it's a continuous loop, there's no fast-forwarding or rewinding or anything else needed. You just hit the play button and let it go. Of course, it didn't always work that way. It required the maintenance on the machines to play those back. Pretty high maintenance, because obviously you had record and playback heads. It's a magnetic tape. Looks a lot like an 8-track. And it required a lot of maintenance to keep them sounding good. And they had pressure pads, but Kirk's pointing to is that would be the return.
The loop.
Coming back, the loop there. And that hub would sit on nylon washers and would spin around.
Ah.
And then you'd splice the tape to make it a continuous loop. And the front are pressure pads, which a lot of guys on the air would know those pads would tend to fall off as they dried up. Right, exactly. Another thing you could do is you could actually rebuild those. And I actually made a pretty good living, a little side business, rebuilding carts for people long, long time ago. I probably still have the cart winder somewhere, but I would take those apart and I could rebuild them and put any length that you wanted on there with fresh tape and put in new pads and new washers on the platters and on the spindles and everything and clean them up and make them look pretty. And again, wind them to any length you wanted. So, but that was pretty much a standard for many, many, many years for playing back audio. That was pretty much, you walked into a radio station, you would see those lying around. They were used mostly in the beginning for commercials. And then later on, into the 80s, stations pretty much played everything, music and spots and everything on those carts.
Yeah. Well, there is a practical limit to the tape loop length, too, and it's about 11 and a half to 12 minutes before you're out of space on that actual reel in there, and the machine just can't pull it anymore.
Yeah. But they had bigger ones. They had bigger carts than this that would hold close to half an hour.
Right.
Yeah. And the most popular use of bigger ones were in delay machines.
Yeah.
So, Chris, you said you've wound your own carts, and certainly I have too. You buy the right lubricated tape that would rub against itself, okay, and you'd wind it in here, and then you had to splice it. There's a splice in this continuous loop of tape. Did you ever wind them with the wrong side out?
Actually, no, because the machine that I used for
because you're the engineer, winder, that's why.
That's right. No, because I had a cart winder. So, I mean, when I put the platter of tape down, as long as you just spool it correctly, it always winds the right way. So I've never really had an issue with that. I have done it where, the secret with rebuilding those and putting your own tape in, though, was that take-up loop on the back where it fed back into the spool. If you had that too tight or too loose, you'd either the machine wouldn't play because the tape would be too tight on the spool, or it'd be so loose that when you stop, the spindle would continue to spin, platter would spin, and you get tape wound up on the inside of it. So there really was kind of a secret sauce to how to get that right and get just the right amount of tension and right amount of give on the tape when you built up the loop. The other thing is how well you could splice, because There were some CART erasers that you could put in there and it would find the splice. So when it erased, it would find the splice for you so that you wouldn't be recording over a splice. Because what would happen is if there was a bad splice and you had audio going over it, the audio would have a dropout where the splice was. So it was also a function of how well you know, how good of a job you did doing the splice and everything else was, you know, if you could hear it when it rolled over your splice. So I bring good memories of that. I remember many evenings sitting there with the, in front of the cart winder building carts.
You mentioned about getting the right amount of tape on here, get the tension just right. You're right. That was so critical. But remember what the folks at 3M, at Scotch, uh-huh, right? Yeah. The ITC carts. Remember what they did? They had,
they had the a Scotch tension carts. Yeah,
a tensioner built into it. That was pretty cool.
The Scotch carts also didn't have tape pads. They relied strictly on the tension to keep the tape up against the heads.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
That's right. That's right. No little foam pad. And these are suffering. These are worn out. You push them in, they stay in. That's bad. No tension. So the hole in the bottom here was for what?
Pinch roller.
The pinch roller. The pinch roller would pop up. It would go boop like this. And this hole was for the cart. When you push the cart in. Oh, wait a minute. I have a demonstration. See if I can. Okay, here's the front of the cart machine. Fidelipak. And let's see if we can zoom in on that. There's the business end inside there. And there's the solenoid up toward the top of your screen there. And then there's the card cage there has the audio amps and the record electronics. This is a recorder, too. And there's the pinch roller that can come up. I'm sorry, I don't have a third hand to show you the pinch roller coming up. And there are the record and play heads are under that shield right there. You can barely see them. They're square and shiny back inside there. And so that's why the cart has three.
One of the measures of a good cart machine, too, is how fast a solenoid could pull up the pinch roller because, you know, especially top 40 station in a higher energy environment, you wanted those songs to start immediately. And so, you know, you'd see how fast the machines would start by how quickly the pinch roller would fly up and start playing the tape after you hit the play button on front. And sometimes the solenoids would start to get old, and that's how you'd know is you'd hit the button and instead of going snap and kind of go, and it would, take forever for the thing to start. And then you
had to be careful if you were in kind of a dusty environment, because if the solenoid plunger got a little bit of dust on it, or if the spring, the reverse tension spring started to lose some of its springiness, what would happen is the puck wouldn't fall down. As when the machine stopped, the puck would pull away, so the tape would stop. And it wouldn't go down quite as fast. And Joe Jock, who was a little, a little anxious, would grab the cart, yank it, and he'd take a chunk out of the bottom of the puck. So the next time you put the cart in, you'd hear the song on the air there.
I wanted to point out a couple more things here. Here's the power transformer for the power supply. And you notice it's not a standard square frame power transformer, and neither is a switching power supply. It's a toroidal power transformer. Now, who knows why they used a toroidal power transformer in a piece of gear like this?
Better efficiencies, low heat, lower magnetic flux around it?
Yeah, lower magnetic flux around it is what I always understood. I may be wrong about that, but that's what I understood.
Converting DC.
And then here's that solenoid. Now, this one has an adjustment. Let me see if I can get my finger about where it is. There is a little screw adjustment. It's a hex head. Yeah, a little hex screw adjustment. And that adjusts how fast air can come out the back of this thing. So if you tighten it up, the air hole was smaller and the pinch roller would come up more slowly and more quietly. And if you loosened it up all the way, it would snap up. But sometimes the solenoid might bottom out and go make a good hard thwap inside. So that wasn't.
And also would burn the tape.
Yep.
It would do what? Burn the tape?
Yeah. If you had the solenoid too fast, too tight, you'd put a burn mark and wear off the oxide on the tape. Eventually it would snap at that point. Yeah.
So we're still in teaching mode here. Bert, can you zoom up on this black block right here where my finger is? This block, this was a great design. So many cart machines were poorly designed with regard to the head block. This is the part that holds the head, and it's got to be mechanically just wonderful, just really well done. On so many cart machines, it was just stamped metal, and it was just awful. This one was very well done, as were a lot of them made by ITC. This one it has a couple of adjustments here for azimuth. Now, this is a recorder, so it has two heads, a record head and a playback head. But they have adjustments for what, height? Height and insertion.
Zenith.
And azimuth, and then lock down.
And tilt back and forth.
Oh, yeah, zenith. Yeah,
they used to.
Yep.
Wow. So, yeah, I had to keep all that stuff. You know, as a contract engineer, it seems like I made a lot of car payments. adjusting heads at radio stations.
And we used to have these little test jigs to put in there to make sure that the heads were far enough and not too far out of the head block, so you wouldn't misseat the cartridge when they went in. Also, there was another one that you could put between the capstan and the pinch roller to make sure that they were both straight and aligned, so you didn't have the pinch roller pulled in a little too much. So,
and then you'd grab your cart with the tone on it, pop that in, start tweaking.
Standard Tape Laboratories, yep. Cartridge alignment tape. This is at a fluxivity of 250 nanowebers per meter. My voice should be coming from the left channel.
You've heard that recording a few times, haven't you, Tom?
Just a couple.
Well, look at what I've got here. Look at this. Is this awesome or what? Okay, it's weighs a
Collins
20.
Remote mixer.
It's a who?
Collins remote mixer.
Oh, Collins remote mixer. Yes, indeed. And it's a 212Z1 remote amplifier from Collins. It has on the back, it's got some inputs. Looks like it's got about four mic inputs. And it's got, look at there. I'll show you the back. Get this thing turned around. Okay, so it's got four mic inputs right there. And then, whoops, wrong way. And then it's got, there's the line level inputs. They're binding posts. You know, no RCA connectors here, boys.
Actually, I think those are outputs, Kirk. One says PA on it. One's probably right, line
out. One says telephone.
These top two said line one, line two.
Yeah, I think those are outputs.
You know what? You're probably right. Yep, output line one, output line two. So the inputs, they're all XLRs. Were they all mics? Mic inputs, though. I don't know.
That's why I got invented pads.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Yeah, so it had a connection for the telephone line here and for the PA here. Sure enough. You could run this thing off batteries or off AC, apparently. There was a lamp with a dimmer control for the VU meter. If you were in the symphony orchestra, you wouldn't want the lamp turned all the way up.
That's the new Axie design for 2012.
Yeah, right. Right. I do kind of miss those days. Okay.
Retro design.
What's this, guys?
Filter cavity.
That's a filter cavity.
I'm going to say the 450 band.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
Yep, there it is.
And Tom, why did you say 450 band? What made you say that?
Looking at the size of it, because that's about a quarter wave at 450.35, according to the label.
So who knows what's inside this thing? Well, first of all,
not much is.
This is a football. Here's the top of it. It's got two. Let me get this right. It's got two N connectors for RF, and then it's got this vernier plunger adjustment here that makes something go up and down inside. So it's a big cavity, and you'll also
notice, Kirk, if you look at those N connectors, at least one of them probably has some attenuation on it. Because if you were to take one of those out, it's got a loop on the bottom of it for coupling. And depending on how much coupling you had, depended on how much attenuation you would get through there.
Both of them do. It says
it would affect the shape of the filter.
It's calibrated insertion loss, a quarter dB, half dB, 1 or 2 dB. You could loosen these screws around it. Oh, you got one there too. Okay. Good.
Yep, this is from another company. Is 450 also.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's so you got just one keep those around the basement. What are you talking about?
Do you just keep those?
Little plunger on there.
Here's a 2 meter one.
Oh, my goodness.
He's got one of 2 meters. I put beer in those.
put beer in those. Oh, my God.
Who says there isn't any in mine? Tap.
Oh, gosh. All right. We're not far from the end of the show here. I got one more piece of hardware to show and then some QSL cards. By the way, we're broadcasting. We're doing the show live from the studios, the lobby, actually, of WHBC in Canton, Ohio. And I want to thank them very much for making the room available to do This Week in Radio Tech from here. I'm Kirk Harnack, along with Tom Ray, Chris Tobin, and Chris Tarr on This Week in Radio Tech. We're just having a blast here, showing off some of the things from the storeroom, the memorabilia room, the junk room at here at WHBC. This is just amazing. All right, I got this thing here. And I love these things, and they don't make them awesome anymore. Who,
that's the
who
best.
Wants to tell me all about this?
111C coils.
It's a transformer.
Yep.
And the cool thing about that transformer is it'll pass from, about 20 hertz all the way up past 75 kilohertz. So you could actually put FM composite through that transformer if you wanted to and isolate your composite signal.
You put a square wave in there.
Well,
you put a square wave in. Yep.
To prevent hum.
Yes, to prevent hum. We've talked about these before, and these are so useful. If you've got to get audio and just analog audio from one place to another, maybe over a couple miles of wire, you put this at each end of it, and you wire it appropriately for 600 ohms in. Maybe you want to do 150 ohms on the wire side, and then at the other end, do the opposite, 150 ohms facing the wire and 600 ohms, the characteristic impedance, facing your equipment. You'll get really nice flat audio, even with a very long wire there. You know, you can tell a little bit about how it works or how it's wound inside by the shape of the bottom. There's this big dimple in the bottom where it's convex coming out. So that kind of tells me that the windings must go around this way inside there. Is that what it tells you? Anybody ever been inside one of these things? No?
No.
No.
I would imagine that there's steel or mu metal and wire and tar.
Yes.
Oh, it's a construction design you'll never see again. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are fantastic. If you find them, hoard them because they are so useful.
And they're very hard to find. As a matter of fact, there's one here going for $56 on eBay right now.
Yeah.
Yep. I think I sold several on eBay for about $75. Shame on me.
Those are great. If you can find one, man, hang on to it.
Well, here we have, we're going to wrap the show up here with some QSL cards. Tom Ray, what does QSL mean?
QSL is short lingo for contact made and I understand.
Oh, okay. Well, that would make sense.
It's an acknowledgement that I've I understood what we've done and we've had a conversation, and you're just confirming the fact that we did that.
Well, let's look at I always thought it was just ham radio operators, amateur radio operators that had QSL cards, but you know, radio stations do too. If you hear a station and you want to report that you heard it, maybe some significant distance away, due to atmospheric conditions or the fact that you've got a heck of an antenna. Here's one. This one, it says, your good neighbor, WHBC, established 1925, Canton, Ohio, and confirming reception report of February 16th, 1970, from 1:59 to 2:44 a.m. Eastern Time, John Shen, chief engineer. I don't know where this came from, though. I don't know who this was sent to. Oh, my goodness. Ah, well, this is... This is kind of funny. Check this one out. This is Dale's QSL card. So he's a ham operator. He'll send this out to folks who see. That's my fear of getting into ham radio too much. That could be me.
Yes.
Tom, is that what happens when you spend too much time in the ham shack?
I wouldn't know. I never come out of the ham shack. But here you go.
That's yours?
My QSL card.
Beautiful.
Yep. That's the Mudna Viaduct Railroad Trestle, which is about 100 years old, used to be on the Erie Line.
You know, I was wondering, why do so many U.S. AM radio stations get reception reports from places like Norway, right? All right. I've engineered for some AM stations that got reception reports from Finland and Norway. Well, I have the answer.
They have radio clubs and guys have hobbies over there where they actually go out in the woods and they'll take an antenna. They'll string a 1 or 2 miles worth of wire through the trees in the wintertime and they'll just sit there and listen for hours.
Yeah.
Well, and there's another reason. It's not very far to Norway if you go to the pole. It's not that far.
And you know, back in the 20s and 1930s, the QSL cards for broadcast stations actually helped tell where your signal was going and what your reception was like. Nowadays, with you know, because there were very few stations on the air. Nowadays, with the amount of stations that are on the air, you know, it's a nice acknowledgement that someone picked you up far away, but it really doesn't tell us all that much anymore. But back in the 20s and 30s, boy, it told you a heck of a lot.
Well, here's one more picture. I guess this is the transmitter, the FM transmitter here. And I think that would be, is that Nipper or is it supposed to be Nipper?
Probably supposed to be Nipper, but that looks like BE transmitter.
I was going to say, that looks like a BE transmitter. Right.
Yeah, not an RCA, but a BE. All right. I think I'm out of show and tell. That's it. That's the news that is news. All the news that's fit to talk about from WHBC in Canton, Ohio. So surely our little show here has brought back a couple of memories. Maybe not of you using this equipment, but think back to some of the earliest gear that you were exposed to, gentlemen, and you did use. Maybe you can whoever raises their hand first could tell us about an experience of when you first got into broadcasting. Or maybe you ran across, you know, something in a storeroom. Or maybe you took some equipment out that was really, really old. Something that was maybe nicotine covered from an old control room where they smoked 24/7. Don't all raise your hands at once. But, hey, Tom Ray, you got any full story for us of some old gear?
Yeah, well, when I worked at WDRC in Hartford out in the shed, we had a couple of... what the heck? Well, they were RCA turntables, which had the washing machine motor underneath, but and a physical light switch like you'd find on the wall of your house to start the thing. Platters were, I'm going to say, 18 inches. I mean, it was a big platter, heavy, but it had two tone arms. And I had always wondered what the heck, and was it a main and a backup? Come to find out that in the days of radio, like in the 1930s, when they used to put on radio programs, and actually it was more like towards the 1940s when they started putting sound effects on record instead of doing them all of them live in the studio, you could cue up two separate sections of a record with two separate sound effects on that turntable.
Okay.
It was just the coolest things. You look at the thing; it had the tone arm in the normal position on the right hand side. And then it had one right behind it, on the top of the turntable going this way.
Oh yeah, okay.
It was just the weirdest thing to see.
Unbelievable.
Well, the young whippersnapper, Mr. Tarr, you come across old gear, or is all the stuff you across like from the 1980s?
No, I mean I've worked at a couple of small market stations where you know it's like walking into 1950. You know, it's got the old RCA console and you know the big old platter turntables like Tom Ray was talking about. So yeah, early in my career, back in the '80s, I've walked into some studios, worked in some studios that were like that. So you still do every once in a while as a contract guy. I come across storerooms and things like that have old gear in it, and I appreciate it. It's always good to see that stuff. And some of the stuff today still works great, and some of the stuff is still in service. But, I run into it every so often.
And Mr. Tobin, surely working at CBS like you did for some years, you they had to have rooms of, oh, my goodness, when is this from?
Well, I will say that early on in my career, I did work at a radio station where our transmitter site was a bomb shelter. And my first few days there was interesting. Walked into the building at the base of the tower and found a trap door And I asked the engineer that was leaving, what is this for? He goes, oh, you'll find out. It'll be a surprise. I'm like, oh, how nice. Open the door. Yeah. Open the door. Had the creaky sound that you'd expect. Look down a staircase. It's dark. No light. I'm like, oh, this should be fun. So I made sure it was a bright early day when I went down. And sure enough, bomb shelter. And inside was a studio, small studio for two people. It was a RCA mixer, a lot of civil defense K rations or can rations, and a transcription turntable, and a couple of microphones with the RCA DX, right? Yeah, the salt shakers, the cylindrical ones or the Johnny Carson microphone. And it was on boom mics. It was pretty wild. And actually, the stuff worked. I powered it up. It actually fired up and worked. And the charcoal filtered air ducts that led upstairs out behind the generator shack. It was wild. That was the oldest stuff I found. But at CBS, working at the CBS Broadcast Center, there's some history there. That facility went online in 1952. It was a milk farm, a dairy, before they moved in. And in the basement, three basements down, was where the cows were brought in on train. There was actually a railroad level. There are railroad tracks that pass beneath the building, but they're all closed up. And that's where they bring in the cows. And in the basement, if you can picture a small, not small, but probably about 20 feet wide, these half like little alcoves, stone alcoves, and a slab, concrete slab inside the alcove. And around the perimeter of the slab was a cutout for you'd have drainage for, you know, water and whatever else to another cutout that went along the length of the basement room. And that's where they would milk the cows. And it was called Sheffield Farms. Sheffield Farms. And I actually have a glass milk bottle that I found at the transmitter site of a radio station prior to my arrival to working at CBS. When we were digging up the ground, it was a former city dump, trash dump. And I said, wow, this is interesting, Sheffield Farms. Only to find out 10 years later I'd work in the building that this came from. So talk about old stuff. And the equipment that we had at the broadcast center, the studios, some of the studios I got to work in were actually the ones that you would have watched Walter Cronkite, Edward R. Murrow broadcast from. The RCA, some of it was RCA equipment, a lot of Western Electric equipment, the vintage material. Just to this day, some of it's still usable. And, you know, now they use for props. But, you know, we had, you know, a dozen TV studios and half the sound stages we used for all kinds of stuff. So it was just, yeah, it's like walking through a museum, an active museum. Yeah, it was wild. I could say over the years I've come across some good stuff. But there, Kurt, you have some really good vintage material.
Well, I've got a couple of guys to thank here for this. We're going to have to wrap up the show here pretty quickly. Thanks for your stories, gentlemen. So I've been broadcasting from WHBC in Canton, Ohio, a station that's been on the air since 1925, so it's almost 90 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 90 years. Dale Lamb is the chief engineer here, right?
Yeah, that's okay. Correct.
All right. And also, Jason Stroll is the IT guy here.
Correct.
So I've been working with both of these guys today and had a great time, and sure thank them for their hospitality. Hey, I'll be back in Canton, Ohio tomorrow if you want to come by and see us. So we have two things to do before we wrap up the show. Number one, give away an Omnia AXE. Oh, did you have something there? A T-shirt? Oh, this is better than a T-shirt. This is a polo shirt. You sure this hadn't been worn?
It's been laundered.
It says News Talk 1480 WHBC, Canton, Ohio. That's beautiful. That's my color red. I like that. All right. I won't change right here, but I will wear it tomorrow. And thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate that. And thank you for the we were going into the show, 15 minutes before the show, wondering, what are we going to talk about tonight? And I was calling Tom and calling Chris. And what are we going to talk about? I don't know. And, Dale came up with all this gear to show, and this has really been great. So thanks very much for the opportunity.
Thank you for having us, and thank you for showcasing a place Jason and I both, we really love this. Radio's in our blood, both of us, and we're in hog heaven, but don't let the boss hear.
Don't let the boss hear. I'm working for free, but don't tell the boss. Well, we don't want to give away an Omnia AXE. One of the ways that we promote the show and more people viewing the show is by asking you to follow us, either me, at K Harnack on Twitter, or follow at Torch Show on Twitter. And when you receive an announcement that the show's going to start and something about, a little tease for the show, if you retweet that to your followers, then you're eligible to win an Omnia AXE. That's software for Windows that does audio processing and does streaming. It will encode a stream into MP3 or AAC, different flavors of AAC. Pretty cool little product. And normally it's a $500 software package. We're going to give one away free right now. Dale, I need a number between 1 and 31. That's going to be a random number, and we're going to pick a winner from that.
Should I say it?
Oh, sure. Give me a number.
21.
21. All right, that'd be a jack and a 10. 21, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Looks like, if I started the right place, looks like our winner is John Meek. On Twitter, he goes by @ElectronJohn. John Meek is our winner of Omnia AXE. And John is a musician, tinkerer, space nerd, and director of Camp Vineyard, according to his Twitter profile. So, Electron John, I've never met you, but we're fixing to talk about Omnia AXE, and we'll get you a license for that. So thanks again. I appreciate that. Electron John has 110 followers. Also, thanks to Axia Audio for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. Appreciate that very much. And let's see, do we have any? Oh, yeah, we need a show title. That's right. Do we have a show title? Let's go check with the chat room and see what the chat room wants to suggest for a show title. Oh, man, this is the Birdhouse. Oh, Birdhouse sounds pretty good. Birdhouse for a show title. Junk from the Attic. Okay, Junk from the Attic.
That's actually going a pretty retro. Good title.
Which one? Junk from the Attic?
Junk from the Attic.
Going right.
Junk from the Attic. I like it. It actually came from the basement. Like, nobody has to know that.
I like going retro myself. That's kind of good.
Going retro?
This old birdhouse. Love it.
Okay, that's
okay.
It.
We spent some time on that. Ding, that's ding, it. Ding, this ding. Old birdhouse. And last century in radio tech. That was good, Bob Olowenko. Very funny. This old birdhouse came from Dale Poco. Okay, thank you, Dale. Well, that's the show. Appreciate you. And we'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye, everybody.